This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Wednesday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. We're going to get some NFL stories coming up, but we're going to start today on this hour with baseball. Aaron Judge hitting home run number 60 last night. All right, so who's more Babe Ruth, Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge? I know the AL MVP debate is going back and forth in terms of who is actually more valuable to their current organization. Aaron Judge on a first-place team in the city of New York, where he's going to get tremendous media attention, tying a mark set by Babe Ruth. He's got one more to tie Roger Maris, and then one more to set the American League single-season home run record, or Shohei Ohtani, who is a player nobody else can compare themselves to in Major League Baseball, because he pitches really well, and he bats really well. He just doesn't do one thing well and another one okay. He's a fantastic pitcher, and he's fantastic at the plate. But as we talked about yesterday a little bit, Shohei Ohtani, being such the unicorn that he is, could actually turn the MVP award into something where they may have to change it and offer like a hitter's award, like they offer a Cy Young award, because he is going to set the bar so high that no other player, no matter what they do, can compete. Let's be honest, if you can't win the AL MVP by setting the single-season home run mark, because a guy can pitch and bat really well, no one is ever going to win it. If Aaron Judge wins the Triple Crown and hits 62, 63, 64 home runs, and yet Shohei Ohtani, who again, great on the mound, great at the plate, he can allow no runs and drive in all the runs on any night that he pitches. That's what he's capable of doing. But if Shohei Ohtani wins the MVP, no one in the American League would ever win the MVP unless Ohtani had such an off year. But again, if you're pitching and batting and the numbers are still pretty decent, no one can compete against that. But the reality of it is that what we're watching with Aaron Judge is something really, really special. And we're going to get to that coming up next. Because last night, hitting 60 in the way he hit it in a comeback for the Yankees, we're really looking at 2022, and numbers may not mean as much as they used to a lot of people in baseball, but they still have a tremendous amount of value. So we're going to talk about that coming up. We'll get to the NFL teams, all of them that are 1-1. Who is up? Who is down? We'll talk about that coming up this hour as well. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Thanks for joining us. We continue along this morning. All right, so we're going to start with baseball. Last night, the Yankees had a comeback win against the Pirates. Giancarlo Stanton hit a walk-off grand slam. But before that, Aaron Judge hit a home run that was number 60 on the season. And he now has tied Babe Ruth. The one year Babe Ruth set the home run mark with 60. Now that's where Aaron Judge is. He's one away from Roger Maris, two away from owning the AL record, but he's still 14 away from owning it all time. The Yankees have 15 games left on the season. He's not going to get that. But he could end up with 66, 67 home runs. And what exactly would we do with that? Well, there's not really nothing much we can do with that. Baseball does not do what college football and college basketball does. See, they do not punish retroactively. So they don't go back and say, that's all for naught, right? They just go, this is our history. This is the what happened. These are the things that have occurred within the sport. Jeff Passan had a really good point that, yeah, performance-enhancing drugs may have affected this home run chase and sort of nullified it in people's heads, but every single mark in the history of Major League Baseball carries some baggage. I mean, you could get really nitpicky with the way certain players got their home runs. I mean, Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs at a time where there was an integration of baseball. Roger Maris hit 61 home runs in a few more games than Babe Ruth, and also without the international aspect of Major League Baseball that we see today. And then there's also the fact that, you know, there was a period of time where performance-enhancing drugs kicked in and have skewed this mark. And Judge is doing it at a time where baseball has been very, very hard on players who have been caught with performance-enhancing drugs. And it is not just the, you know, steroid injections and whatnot where the head is two sizes too big, right? We're talking about creams, anything, any little tiny masking agent. They're finding all of this stuff. Fernando Tatis suspended for that. They have no problems going after stars. They're not overlooking anybody. They know that that stained the game. So Judge, like every other baseball player, is heavily tested. So you feel like this is a clean run at a mark, even though the leagues and sort of the separation of the leagues has been blurred over the last couple of years. There's a point where these are just going to be names. They're not going to have any significance whatsoever now that we're playing against each other, and you know, there everybody's going to play everybody at some point during the season. But that being said, it's still fascinating watching this debate between Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. And as I said this at the top of the hour, Ohtani is setting the bar in a different way now, because if you're just going to look at a guy that is such a good pitcher and such a good hitter. I mean, he's approaching 30 home runs and 200 strikeouts, right? I mean, these are things no other player can compete against. It's not Aaron Judge's fault that he doesn't pitch, right? Aaron Judge can only do what he does, which is play the outfield the best way he possibly can and do his job at the plate. So Shohei Ohtani at 28 years old is a extremely valuable player. But I'm not a guy that looks at the MVP. I know a lot of people are, but I'm not. I don't think you need to be on the best team to be the MVP. I don't think you have to go to the playoffs. There's so much more that goes in, that's involved in a 162-game schedule, and you can only do your part. I don't think an MVP should come from the best team record-wise, because your accomplishments may or may not have anything to do with the record that that team has. Shohei Ohtani can only win the games he pitches, and at the plate, he can only contribute the best way he possibly can. If the Angels players around him can't hit, or the other pitchers can't pitch, the Angels aren't going to the postseason like they aren't this year. But the reality of it is that there's a term here that I don't think has been properly defined. And that term is valuable. What exactly does valuable mean? And that, I think, that's a question we have to ask in any sort of MVP role that we all have in any sport. What exactly does valuable mean? Is Aaron Judge valuable to the Yankees? Well, okay, let's take the value in terms of marketing and ticket sales and all that stuff. Throw that out the window. I don't mean valuable like that. I mean valuable on the field. Is Aaron Judge valuable? Well, of course he's valuable, but how valuable? Right? Shohei Ohtani valuable? Well, Ohtani has these incredible statistics. Like I mentioned, he's approaching 30 home runs, 200 strikeouts. No player can compete with those kind of numbers. But the reality of it is the Angels aren't going to the postseason again. They have a losing record. They're not a factor at all. So how valuable is that, right? So again, I'm not saying that an MVP has to come from a winning team, but how valuable is that? What does it matter if he's on the team or not if the result is there's October baseball and he's not playing in it? And the same thing with Aaron Judge. Are the Yankees a playoff team without him? Likely. They've got other players on the team. They've got other sluggers on the team. And whoever replaces Judge in the lineup, it wouldn't necessarily mean he has to hit 60 home runs for the Yankees to lead the division. It doesn't mean that Aaron, you know, he has to chase the triple crown for the Yankees to go to the playoffs. So I think the word valuable is sort of skewed here. So if we're not talking about actual value to the team's success, then what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about statistics. That's what this sort of award comes down to, is statistics. Okay, well, if it comes down to statistics, Aaron Judge is approaching the Triple Crown. Well, 10 other players have done that. All right, so if you're talking about 60 home runs, a few other players have done that, but not many. But no one has done what Shohei Ohtani's doing. But the reality of it is that Aaron Judge is the MVP this season. And the reason he is because if we look at Shohei Ohtani and what we say is he's our modern day Babe Ruth, what happened last night means Aaron Judge is also our modern day Babe Ruth. And in a way, he's more of a Babe Ruth in our eyes, because the mythical Babe Ruth is what we all know. Very few of us know the Shohei Ohtani Babe Ruth. Very few of us know the Babe Ruth that was an outstanding pitcher and batter for the Red Sox. What we know in the mythical version of Babe Ruth is that it's a guy who hit a home run every time he came to the bat. He pointed his bat into the outfield to show exactly where he would hit home runs. And he hit home runs in such a way, in so much more than anybody else in the league, he made more than the president of the United States. He was a larger-than-life personality. He was the biggest personality of his time. Why was he that? Because he hit home runs. Because that's what his show was. And so if any comparison to Babe Ruth comes down to the Shohei Ohtani, what he's doing is correct, but it is now also correct for what Aaron Judge accomplished last night. Aaron Judge equaled the mark. In fact, he bettered the mark because he reached it with 143 games in his that he has played in. And he's got 15 more games to add to this total. Now, again, this is not to say what Ohtani is doing this year is not, again, valuable to what the Angels are. Of course it is. And it's not to say that what he's doing is so far better as a player than others. It's just not this year. Judge plays for the Yankees in a media market that is heavy, heavy invested into what the Yankees do on a daily basis. That is not what is going on in Anaheim. And Judge has reached a mark that is valuable to baseball fans. In a lot of ways, and I want to get emotion out of this equation, but in a lot of ways, what is so great about this chase is that there's a feeling personally for me that I'm getting something authentic, right? That's just me. I know there are plenty of people that are like, I don't care. It's not 73. It's not even close to 73. So wake me up when somebody gets to 73. And I completely understand. Baseball, again, look at college athletics. You win the Heisman, but your mom got a house. The Heisman gets taken away. You win a Big Ten title, and somehow there's some money underneath the table to you. They take all the banners down. You win a national championship, and yet somehow there's some recruiting violation. They take the banner down, and there's that little, well, they won, but they didn't win, kind of forget what you saw. Baseball doesn't do that. Baseball lives with all of its numbers, and it also lives with all the sadness some of those numbers may bring. We've talked about the 1998 home run chase a lot. We reminisce a lot. And we've been talking about it because Judge is approaching it and has been approaching it for a while. But for me, the home run chase was not 1998. The home run chase was my whole life. My whole life, I wanted to see certain numbers in baseball because the sport values numbers more than any sport out there. It really does. It's part of its lore. New stadiums, different dimensions, a little longer season, right? Integration, internationalization, the way the game has changed. The numbers still stay the same. The numbers still have tremendous value. Pitchers don't, you know, used to go longer in the old days. Used to get them a little bit more tired. Now you might face three different pitchers in a night if you're a batter. Right, all of these different elements to baseball, but the numbers still remain the same. Judge is not going to be the top dog when it comes to home runs. And you know what? Looking this up, he's got 213 home runs for his career. He's 30 years old. So it's not likely he is going to even come close to anything Barry Bonds or Hank Aaron or Babe Ruth did career-wise. He's been injured a lot. He's had seasons where he played 20 games. Those matter in your 20s. He's not going to average 48 home runs for the next decade until he's 40 to get close to 700 like Albert Pujols did. Well, he might, but I mean, it's unlikely. Because he's a big guy and he's likely to get hurt again and miss half a season again. But to me, again, Aaron Judge is the modern Babe Ruth right now. He is the Babe Ruth you know of. Shohei Ohtani might be the Babe Ruth in the more complete version, because Ruth was an excellent pitcher and an excellent hitter. But everybody around the country who knows anything about baseball, and you don't even have to know anything about baseball, if I went down the street and asked anybody at all what they think of what Babe Ruth meant, what he is known for, the mythological Babe Ruth, or the real Babe Ruth, but the larger-than-life Babe Ruth is a home run king, and right now in the American League, Aaron Judge is two away from owning that crown. If a guy can't get an MVP award for doing that, Shohei Ohtani wins every MVP award from now until he's done. If he is the standard, that's it. Then you're going to have to create another award to acknowledge the accomplishment of what Aaron Judge is doing this year. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We've got some NFL to get to as we are at the midweek point where we're still looking at the back and now looking ahead. Trouble in Pittsburgh, I got that for you coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right, we're going to go over some teams in the NFL that are 1-1. Kind of give a thumbs up, thumbs down to the first two games of the season. Hey, if you're 2-0, you're in good spot. If you're 0-2, you're desperate. But if you're 1-1, what kind of 1-1 are you? We'll go over that coming up. But again, talking about the Aaron Judge home run last night. By the way, the fan that caught it, all he wanted was signed stuff. He didn't try to sell it. He didn't try to... You put it up all for auction. He just wanted to give it back to Aaron Judge. That's nice.
He wasn't trying to fleece them for everything?
He can make six figures easily with that ball. Maybe he's a hedge fund manager sitting in the bleachers. I don't know.
Maybe six figures isn't anything to him.
Maybe not. I don't know. Some people want to get some value out of it, and some people are like, I just want to give it back to the player. There's an attachment to the player. But Aaron Judge turned down a 7-year contract extension at the beginning of the season. He's betting on himself. And boy, I'm telling you, the Yankees, they better sign this guy. They better sign this guy. He seems to say all the right things about liking to play in New York. First place in New York, packed house, excited, etc. But like I said, he's getting close to this mark, and I can't imagine him being held without a home run in the next 15 games, right? I think he's going to probably get six. Right? Six more. Boy, it'd be great if he got 74 home runs and hit one in every game but one. Wouldn't that be nice? But that would be just nearly impossible. But nevertheless, he's probably going to have like 66 when he's done, when it's all said and done. But he's one away. And now every at-bat is going to be intensified. Now every camera is going to be on him in every single at-bat. It's very much like Albert Pujols when he gets close. When he gets 699, every at-bat is going to be intense. I'll tell you why this was such a big deal. So last night, the Pirates got a huge lead going into the ninth inning, right? And the Yankees scored six runs, I think, in the bottom of the ninth inning to win this game. And actually, it was five runs. So Judge hit the home run, and then Giancarlo Stanton hit a walk-off grand slam. So the Pirates scored four runs in the top of the eighth inning. They led 8-4, and there were still a ton of people at the stadium because they knew that Judge had one more at bat. He's going to come up again. And so people stayed. They didn't stay because they thought the Yankees would rally. I'm sure they didn't care. Like, the Yankees are in first place. Nobody's really threatening them. It's all good. Sometimes you lose. It stinks, but whatever. But they were waiting for Judge. And that's what this is going to be now, is that they were just still in their seats because Judge could have one more bat. Well, how would you like to be on the 4 train going back to Manhattan and find out that Aaron Judge hit his 60th home run of the year? And you were on the train because you left early because they were trailing by four runs going into the bottom of the ninth. No, you stay because you could look at the lineup and you knew Judge was coming up to bat. And always, then Rizzo.
I mean, a situation like that always reminds me of 1988. Yeah. Game one of the World Series where Kirk Gibson hits that iconic home run. One of the, I guess probably top five iconic home runs of all time.
Sure.
And as the ball sails into right field, what do you see behind the stadium? Taillights.
Right, exact. Cars leaving.
Cars leaving.
Exactly. Right, right. So it's I think the one thing that I miss that I feel like the Bonds situation robbed us of is Bonds robbed baseball because he's now got a mark that I just don't think anyone is ever going to catch. I think it was so enhanced by what his body type was that I don't think anybody's going to be able to reach it. And I think that sense of we're breaking in live for these at-bats, Pujols will kind of get that. Like if you're watching ESPN, they'll probably break in, do that split screen thing to show you because it's 700 and it's a big deal. But we're not, I don't think they're going to do that with Judge when he approaches 62. I don't know. Maybe they will. It's New York, so maybe they will. But it's not going to feel like 98. 98 was we all had to stop what we were doing. We were all wondering what was going on. We all were wondering where the chase was going to lead. All of those things. And Judge isn't going to get that because he's not getting the mark. He's not. And it's an American League mark. Yes, but it is not 73 home runs. And baseball is not, there's no asterisk to that. There's no, well, if somebody else comes close, we'll just award that to him. No, they're not doing that. Bonds has it. Bonds will always have it. And so I don't know if there's a sense of national feeling of, wow, we're watching something great. I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the fact that he's playing for the Yankees. I think there is a lot of people. I've lived in many parts of the country. There's a lot of anti-Yankee Red Sox feeling around the country because they seem to be the two teams that ESPN drives down people's throats. True or not, it doesn't matter. It's just a feeling people have. So if he was doing this for the Astros, maybe not the Astros because people still have a feeling about the Astros. Let's say he was doing it for the Minnesota Twins. There might be a feeling, it might be a different feeling. Or if he was doing it for Cleveland, there might be a different feeling. But I think for the Yankees, I don't think people nationally are just, you know, wrapped up in an American League record. But nevertheless, it's still important for baseball. Like I said earlier, I mean, I last night, I mean, think about this for a second. And this is why I started off with this. Why I think it was important, why I think it mattered last night was there's a baseball player today in 2022. And there were baseball players who did it before, but now we have a baseball player in 2022 that matched the best home run season Babe Ruth ever had. So he matched it. And even though we've seen it before, that's a cool thing. Whether or not he's the third person or the fifth person, it doesn't matter. He did it. He matched the best home run season, one of the most legendary athletes this country has ever had. I mean, again, do that sports century thing. What was Babe Ruth, 3 on the list of most important athletes of the 20th century? One of the most important athletic figures who still resonates close to 100 years later, he matched that man's best season. When that man's best season looked impossible at the time. That's what a big deal it was. Sure, it's one short of Maris. And if Judge suffered a torn ACL tomorrow and is done for the rest of the season in the playoffs, he's not Roger Maris. But it doesn't matter. There's a mythical thing to Babe Ruth that Aaron Judge matched. And I think that's important. And I think that was historic. And I was glad he got it. And I'm enjoying the run for Aaron Judge on this pursuit of the American League record. Just like I'm enjoying Albert Pujols' run to 700. I hope Albert Pujols gets it. You know what? I said this yesterday. It's kind of sad to me that they played one game last night, so I think now it's 10 of the next 13 games for the Cardinals are on the road. He's probably going to get that mark in front of a visiting crowd that will give him a standing ovation, but it won't be Busch Stadium. It won't be St. Louis embracing a hero, the guy that was part of World Series championship teams and a guy that hit a lot of those home runs in his career wearing a Cardinals uniform. But nevertheless,
Wake-Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Sports Map Radio. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, and at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right. So, guess who's in first place in the AFC South after two games? Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yep.
Jacksonville Jaguars.
Just as we predicted, Tony.
Just right. Just as we predicted. All right, so as I said earlier, if you're 0-2, you're a bit desperate. You don't want to be 0-3 in this league. It's crazy. I know there's like all these weird statistics that are like 0-3 teams have a 4% chance of going to the Super Bowl. I get it. But you never know, right? You never know. Plenty of 0-2 teams have found their way back to the postseason and whatnot. You know, it's still very, very, very early. And if you're 2-0, it doesn't mean you're going to the playoffs, but heck, it's a good start, right? If you're Miami, that's a fantastic start to the season. If you're the Chiefs and the Bills, it kind of was expected. If you're the Eagles and that might be, you might be like, hey, that's pretty awesome. And if you're the Giants, it's like, wake me up because I must be dreaming. This can't possibly be real. But if you're Tampa Bay, that was expected too. But there are a lot of teams that are 1-1, and there's a difference in their 1-1. All right, so the Patriots are 1-1, but they're a little shaky, right? I think the Patriots are a little shaky. They beat a Steelers team that can't move the ball up and down the field yet. The Jets are 1-1, but it took this sort of bizarre, weird comeback in which Nick Chubb helped by not helping them be able to run out the clock. And the Jets were able to get an onside kick, which again is a 16% chance of ever happening. Listen, do not ever bring this up as, I don't care, on Twitter, the call, I don't care. Don't ever bring this up whenever I complain about the onside kick again. Whenever I say no one gets onside kicks, don't go, well, the Jets did. I know it's been successful. I'm still saying, when your team needs an onside kick, how confident are you that you're going to get it? I'm going to say the confidence is zero because I hate it. I hate it. When my team needs an onside kick, when everybody knows they need an onside kick, I'm almost guaranteed they won't. So I hate it. I wish there was another way, but there isn't. So, there's been proposals that get shot down the second the owners get together. The Steelers are 1-1, but I'm going to tell you what's going on in Pittsburgh right now. Mitch Trubisky did something really interesting yesterday, and I don't know if he meant to do this, but he did it anyway. Well, it was actually Monday in his press conference. Mitch Trubisky talked about the play calling. And he didn't come out and criticize the play calling, but he kind of made it known that he'd like to get the playmakers the ball, and he wants to throw the ball downfield. So Trubisky said, quote, I like to throw the ball downfield. Why I haven't given it certain looks, especially during games, I can't tell you exactly, but we're looking for that. I'm looking for that. He did not come out and blame Matt Canada one bit for the play calling, but he just hinted enough to throw enough red meat, if you will, at the Steeler fans who do understand that averaging just over 5 yards per attempt is awful. There's no doubt that Steeler fans have a problem with Matt Canada, who calls plays for the Steelers. And I think Trubisky absolutely knows that. He's not going to stand on the podium and say things that are going to be critical of the play calling. But if he can just tweak the wording just a bit, it throws enough on the play calling to deflect anybody that's screaming for Kenny Pickett right now. Because if Kenny Pickett is the quarterback of this team, and I do hope that eventually this season he will be, Matt Canada can't call the same plays he's calling for Mitch Trubisky. These are terrible offensive plays. They don't utilize the talent that this team has. So the Steelers at 1-1, listen, I really do believe that this is a difficult year for them. TJ Watt being out, of course, is going to be problematic. I just think offensively, this is the same look that they had last year, right? They're just these short passes that don't do anything, 3 and outs. They had 2 3 and outs in the fourth quarter against the Patriots when they were trying to tie the game or go for the lead. Their offense is just so stagnant and boring that 1-1 for them is on the downside, not the upside. I think like a team like Baltimore, I think Baltimore is a good 1-1. I mean, you may not like the way they closed out that game where Tua Tagovailoa threw four touchdowns in the fourth quarter, but I think the Ravens are a solid 1-1. They're more solid than the Steelers. The Cleveland Browns are not necessarily a solid 1-1, but they're different because you got Jacoby Brissett at the quarterback position, and you know that Deshaun Watson is going to come late, and Jacoby Brissett is trying to keep this thing somewhat manageable. I mean, they could be 2-0 right now. If Nick Chubb can you know, helps them out, helping them run out the clock, they're off to a 2-0 start. And I know when Deshaun Watson comes back, they're expecting that will lead to a run towards the postseason with a fresh quarterback and all that, despite the controversy that will be surrounding him. Jacksonville, are we buying that maybe Jacksonville gets 6 or 7 wins this year? That was a nice victory against the Colts. That was a shutout. And Trevor Lawrence had a nice game. 2 touchdowns, no picks, like 235 yards passing, right? 1-1, tick them up. Yeah, leading the division, you might as well. Chargers remained both in our top fives at 1-1 because somebody had to lose the game against Kansas City, and they did, but they didn't go, you know, they didn't lose with a feeling of there's some problem.
They weren't blown out.
Yeah, they weren't blown out. Justin Herbert's got to get healthy, obviously, with the rib injury, but he still stepped up and threw that beautiful pass, and they were, a possession away from making that game, taking that game. The Broncos, though, I'm not liking their 1-1. The Broncos still have a lot of questions they have to be answered. In fact, did you know that they are a home underdog Sunday night right now based on the books? I don't know. The money might move it because it was only a point when I last checked it yesterday. That the 49ers are favored by a point. The 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo. Are we all buying Jimmy Garoppolo now? That the Broncos are a 1-point underdog at home with Russell Wilson? But Patrick Surtain, their corner, Jerry Jeudy, their wide receiver, are dealing with shoulder injuries. Luckily, it doesn't look like it's long-term, but status for Sunday's game is not yet known. The Broncos' offense came alive a bit late in that game against Houston, but was very miserable up until that point. And Nathaniel Hackett keeps saying all the right things in his press conferences afterwards. We got to be better. We got to be better. But 2 games in, he's still an indecisive guy. And that has been so glaring that it's almost would make me nervous about where he actually is as a head coach. Now, I said these things are correctable at the time, and we said this Monday. These things are correctable, that you hope that Nathaniel Hackett realizes that he's got to be quick on his decision. He's got to come up with a way, communication-wise, with his coordinators to know exactly circumstances that know what the next decision is going to be. That's your job. Your job is to know, all right, here's this third down play. If we get it to 3rd-and-2, 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-inches, this is what we're going to do on 4th down, right? Or 4th-and-inches, I should say. If we don't, this is what we're going to do, either punt it or kick a field goal. Not low down the play clock, then rush your field goal unit out, and then kick a field goal that has to get nullified because you snapped it after the play clock went 0. Look at the way he managed the clock against Seattle. Look at the way he managed the clock in that situation where the Broncos then had to punt. These are not because there's a miscommunication. It's because there's no communication. It's because the head coach didn't know really what to do. That is the hard part. And I think that would make me, as a Bronco fan, nervous, not long term. I think Russell Wilson will be fine, but I'm not as sold on Russell Wilson as a lot of other people. And here's why. Remember when Aaron Rodgers, there was all this buzz that Aaron Rodgers is getting traded to the Broncos? And that was one of my biggest things. I remember I was like beside myself on how one particular broadcaster in Denver went on Twitter and said it was a done deal. And everybody was like already putting Aaron Rodgers' face on Broncos uniforms. And then all of my friends from Denver were anticipating what this would mean and how he was going to work with so-and-so and how it was ridiculous because it didn't even come close to happening. There might have been like a preliminary discussion, but the Packers were never trading Rodgers. But I remember saying, if you're Aaron Rodgers and you're 38 years old, 37 years old, whatever he was at the time, why would you want to go into a division that's got Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, Derek Carr, and the Raiders? Why would you go to that division if you play in a division where you're almost by default going to win it because you're there? Like, you're going to be going up against one of the best quarterbacks in the game, and maybe the competitive nature of it is part of it, but strategically to get to a Super Bowl, it didn't make much sense. Russell Wilson is in that same boat. Russell Wilson is in this swimming pool with two sharks and maybe a little dangerous baby shark that might come up and bite you a little bit in Derek Carr. But Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes are two of maybe the top three quarterbacks in the game right now. Four or five in the game right now. And I think Russell Wilson is a great addition for the Broncos, who've struggled to find a quarterback. But he's swimming in a pool that is very dangerous, because you can have a good year and not make the playoffs. You can have a good year and not be one of the three wildcard teams. You have to have a pretty good year now in the AFC. And so having a head coach that doesn't know when to send the field goal unit out and doesn't know when to send the punt unit out and doesn't manage the clock very well, so much that the fans now have to feel like they have to help you because the big clock that you're supposed to be keeping an eye on, you're not keeping an eye on it. And everyone's on the sidelines going, what exactly are we doing? And you're like, I don't know. I'll kick a field goal. And everybody goes, all right, fine, we'll kick a field goal. And there's 3 seconds on the play clock. All right, we'll get to the NFC 1-1 teams to give you the radar of where they're at coming up next on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Good morning. It's a good Wednesday on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, as we continue, it's Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us. All right, looking at some 1-1 teams, because as I said earlier, 2-0, hey, 0-2, we know you need a win. But 1-1, where are you at? How about the Washington Commanders? Carson Wentz has 7 touchdown passes already this season. Couple of picks. I think 3 total. Washington lost to Detroit, but won their opening game of the season against Jacksonville. So not an impressive 1-1, but yeah, Carson Wentz isn't that bad yet. I know they're ready to pounce. I can only imagine. The Dallas Cowboys, 1 game with Dak Prescott before he got hurt. They didn't look like they could move the ball. Cooper Rush beats the Cincinnati Bengals. Still iffy for me. Minnesota. Boy, was that a tale of two games for the Minnesota Vikings? Which sometimes can happen in this crazy league. You beat the Green Bay Packers. Cousins looks great. They lose to the Eagles. Cousins throws 3 picks, including one that was, returned for a touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. But nevertheless, he throws 3 picks. Darius Slay had 2. Oh, no, that was, that was Ryan Tannehill who threw the pick 6. I knew there was one on Monday night. Came from the Titans guy. Green Bay at 1-1, I think are fine. Fine. This happened last year. They'll win 13 games, 12 games. We know. They'll figure it out. Devontae Adams being out of the Packers for the Packers now he's on the Raiders, is a problem. But I do think Aaron Rodgers figures it out with the current receivers that he has. I think there's a way Aaron Rodgers works through that. I'm not saying that Devontae Adams is replaceable. He's not. He's a Pro Bowl player. He's not replaceable. But it doesn't mean your offense has to look exactly the same. It just can look different, and you can still get kind of the quality production. And Aaron Rodgers looked like Aaron Rodgers in their game against the Bears because he owns the Bears. That was like the 9th straight win or something, like 7th straight win for the Packers over the Bears. Lions 1-1. I'm telling you, watch out. I think this is a 6-7 win team this year. They are not going to win a lot of games. They are still a work in progress. I think everybody who knows this team knows it. But that game that they had against Washington, they were up 22-0, and you had Jared Goff throw 4 touchdowns, even though it's against Washington and they don't have Chase Young on the defensive side of the ball. Aiden Hutchinson had 3 sacks, and it's a huge start for him as a rookie. This was 1-1. This is a good 1-1 because the Lions really took a while last year to get that first victory. They had 3 wins last year, but they came over the final 6 games of the season. So they got their first tie before they got a victory. But now that they got the victory over the hump, And I think that's one of the reasons why Dan Campbell has been so likable, is that the players feel like they're all together on this. They're all in on whatever he wants and whatever he's envisioning this team can do. They're all in on it. As I said yesterday, Hard Knocks can work wonders for you. Like, it can enhance your image. It can hurt your image, but it can really enhance your image. And I think it did wonders for Dan Campbell. People kind of liked him last year based on press conferences, but now that they got to see the inner workings of what this guy does and how he treats his players, how he treats his staff, how he treats everybody that wears anything Detroit Lions, I think he's a very, very likable person. But you can be likable and still be a crappy coach. He's a pretty good coach. And I think the team is buying into it. I like their 1-1. The Bears, I don't. I think that was a wet, sloppy day for their victory against San Francisco. I'm still not sold on Justin Fields quite yet. I wasn't as enthusiastic as the broadcasters were when they got that touchdown early against the Packers. I'm still waiting and seeing on them. I don't think it's either up or terrible. I think it's middle of the road, and I could see them winning 5 or 6 games this year as well. Saints. I'm still sold on the Saints. I still like them. I know that was a bad loss to the Buccaneers. They didn't play particularly well. Had some turnovers. Their 1-1 is different. Everybody in the West, everybody that's 1-1 is fair game. Everybody, including Seattle. You're all up in the air. But the team I like now is San Francisco. Sorry, I really am enthusiastic about their chances with Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know. We'll see, I guess, right? But nevertheless, the Rams, the Seahawks, Cardinals, all 1-1. To the season. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Hit us up on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver, and don't forget, it's Ron with 2 N's.